But we begin with, it's Black History Month, African-American History Month. And here's some Black history they do not teach in our schools, but they ought to, because it is part of, I don't know whether you want to call it controversy, or it's part of the complexity that defines the African-American community in this country, and I'm not sure it exists in other communities of color in other nations around the world. But it's color, Drew. We're not talking about black versus white, black versus brown, black versus red, or black versus yellow. We're talking about black versus brown versus high yellow versus low yellow versus chocolate versus all the different shades of color within the black experience in America, and the politics of it, the racism of it, empirical analysis of it. And on our live line is Dr. Ronald Hall. He is a professor at the School of Social Work at Michigan State University. And that means he's spending his time hoping that his basketball team is good enough to come here for the Final Four on Easter weekend. I see. I know y'all in at Michigan State. Y'all scheming already. But he has spent, besides watching Spartan basketball, he has spent the last 20 years going all around the world looking at skin color. He's been interviewed everywhere. He's the author of two books, the groundbreaking book, The Color Complex, The Politics of Skin Color in a New Millennium, and the editor of Racism in the 21st Century, an empirical analysis of skin color. And he's on our live line. Doc, how you doing?
Fine.
Now, we're supposed to be in the President Barack Obama post-racial era, kumbaya, we all love each other. Why are we still obsessing over skin color?
Well, unfortunately, that issue about the post-racial era is just a fantasy. I think part of the problem has to do with the fact that it's an issue that, because it's so painful, none of us want to discuss it. Most of us as African Americans can relate directly and or indirectly to an experience regarding skin color during our childhood, during our adolescence, and perhaps in our current adult life. And until we can discuss it, confront it, we can resolve it and move on. But discussing it, acknowledging it, that's a painful process, but it's part of the healing.
Is skin color within our community the equivalent of hair color among whites? And when I say that is, in the white experience, blonde is supposed to be it. You know, I want the blonde. I want the Marilyn Monroe, Lady Gaga blonde. Is the whole hair thing is that their thing equivalent to our thing with skin color?
I think there's some overlap there, but skin color in African Americans is a much more painful issue. When Euro Americans decide to bleach or to make their hair blonde, that's more of a casual choice. Sometimes they will and sometimes they won't, but it's not a life-threatening experience. It's not something that they carry as a source of pain from childhood. And you mentioned a little earlier whether this was something that was peculiar to the African American community. As you indicated, I've been studying this issue about 20, 25 years worldwide. Mm-hmm. I've not visited any country where this is not acutely significant. As a matter of fact, if I'm pressed, this issue is not most significant among African Americans, but it's probably most significant in the Asian community, mm-hmm. Particularly India. But most Asian communities are closed, so you aren't privy to the dynamics of this issue among Asians unless you're Asian yourself. But because African Americans have been studied and restudied, the issue gets framed in an African American context, but people should know that this is a worldwide issue prevalent amongst all non-whites, all people of color. No exception.
So in Asian communities there is, well, you're not fine enough. You're not light enough.
Well,
similar.
If you're in India, for example, they have, in many instances, arranged marriages. Mm-hmm. And they will advertise for a bride in their daily newspapers. And they may request that the bride be educated, be chaste, and have light skin. Mm. They're that upfront about it. And if the bride is not light skin, then she's going to have a price to pay. and likely is going to have a very difficult time of finding a husband.
How much did slavery impact this whole skin color thing in this country, in this hemisphere?
Slavery was very influential. It was not only slavery, but it's colonization. And under the yoke of slavery, African Americans unfortunately internalized the norms and the values of the slaveholder. So the ideal people initially became those mixed-race African-Americans who were lighter-skinned and had more Caucasian features. They were the first in our community to be educated. Some of them were allowed to own businesses, and so they started out unequal footing in a black community. Many of them emerged as the leadership in our community. W.E.B. Du Bois, for example. You had the notion of the talented tenth, for example. The talented tenth were lighter-skinned, educated African-Americans who saw their role as to uplift the race. But this association with skin color and class, that is something that goes back to the historical antebellum period, which was the Civil War era, and unfortunately continues to be with us today.
We're talking with Dr. Ronald Hall of Michigan State University. What got you interested in looking at color?
Well, I grew up a child of the 60s, and I remember, I wasn't precocious to any extent, but I remember what was going on around me. And I remember the racial confrontations. I remember the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And it dawned on me that I didn't think that I could reach Euro-Americans where this racial issue was concerned. And I realized that a lot of the same behaviors that we attribute to black-white racism is acted out in the black community. And I began to read about the subject, and I found very little that was written about it, something that was so significant, but very little of it was covered in the literature. And that's when I thought I found my calling. And it allowed me to begin to remember experiences that I had as a young man, things I didn't understand, and it dawned on me that perhaps it had to do with skin color. So I began reading, writing. I wrote my dissertation in 1989. In 1990, I testified as an expert witness in a nation's first case of skin color discrimination involving a light-skinned and a darker-skinned African-American, Morrow versus the Internal Revenue Service. But still, I was surprised because this issue did not seem to be something that entered into public discourse. 10 or 20 years later, we're talking about it.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoon's Name. We're talking with Dr. Ron Hall. I guess you can describe him as a commentator on skin color, the author of two books, The Color Complex, The Politics of Skin Color in a New Millennium, and Racism in the 21st Century, an Empirical Analysis of Skin Color, available at Amazon and all the other places where you can get books from today. 239-1310, 239-1310, you may have a question for him. How much, Dr. Hall, is popular culture responsible for perpetuating these issues of skin color? If you look at Hollywood going back to just after World War II, you know, I think it was in the late 40s, early 50s, that movie called Pinky.
Yes.
About somebody yes. that passed for white. Or even if you look at television today, if you go back to Julia, when yes. Diane Carroll broke the color barrier in terms of the first African-American female to lead a series, that was a light-skinned young lady. Yes. You could look at Scandal and Kerry Washington, light color, but then come right after that is, you know, Murder with Viola yes. Davis, and that's different.
Yes.
You know, a dark-complected actress.
Well, I think popular culture is very significant. The movie Pinky was actually played by a white woman.
Yes.
A similar movie that was probably a little bit more dramatic was a movie called Imitation of Life.
Okay, that was the other one I was thinking of, yeah.
This describes the implications of skin color in the black community, particularly as pertains to women. And I think, you know, there's a little sexism involved here because while African-American men may be similarly discriminated against, African-American men pertaining to skin color have an opportunity to earn their way to some status. So if they are wealthy, they have money, a good job, or earning some status, then they can be an ideal in society. But a woman, she's educated, she's talented, she's bright, but she's dark-skinned, she's not going to be considered the ideal, and I think that's unfortunate.
What happens, because I guess when they do this new Star Wars movie, the young lady, and I never get her pronunciation correct, that was in 12 Years a Slave. He is supposed to
I
be
think
in the
Nyong'o, and I'm not even sure I'm correct.
Yeah, her. That sister. It was very dark-complected,
yes.
And she's going to be in the Star Wars movie, and yes. How significant is that going to be, given that the whole world watches that?
Well, I think that's a significant opportunity, and again, I think that popular culture is very powerful, but I'm sad to say I'm not encouraged that this actress, this darker-skinned actress actually from Africa,
yeah.
That her status is temporary. I think that while it's good to see her in major films, major movies, I think she's getting those roles not because of her beauty, but because she's a very good actress.
Okay.
And at some point, I think her appeal is going to fade in favor of a lighter-skinned, more Caucasian African-American woman. But at least I think that's a good, positive beginning. But I think popular culture, we really need to be most vigilant about, because popular culture is operating on us psychologically at a subliminal level. That is, we're internalizing these norms, and in many instances, we're not even aware of what's going on.
239-1310. 239-1310 is After News. We're Dr. Ron Hall. Go to the phone. Start today with Denise. Hi there.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Name is, it's funny, his last name is Hall, because my dad's last name is Hall. And growing up, my dad is Indian, Irish, black, and growing up, I faced a lot of that among my family, calling me half-breed, I'll never be accepted by black people, I'll never be black. I want to know, that goes back to the Willie Lynch syndrome and what he started, and it's a shame that among a black, I just thought we was all equal.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that until I got called all the names and picked on. And then I was working a job, and one of my friends was dark-skinned, and a manager came out, and we was both going to play in the parking lot, and he came out and told her to clean the bathroom. And the way he said it, it hurt me so bad, because I sort of felt like he picked on her because of color. And I think it's sad that as a community, we already have enough to fight against than to fight amongst our own people. But I think that goes back, or do you agree that goes back to the Willie Lynch, the thing that he did back in slavery days?
Well, the issue pertaining to light skin, as you mentioned, is something that we've not want to talk about and acknowledge, because it's extremely painful. One of the reasons why I really celebrate Bill Duke and his documentary, Light Girls, because it told the other story. While lighter-skinned African-Americans are frequently idealized, they also have to deal with the painful experience of their own people challenging their ethnicity. Now, some may see that as trivial, but if you're on the receiving end, that's very painful. And whether you are being ridiculed because you're too dark or ridiculed because you're not dark enough, it's pain nonetheless. And so darker-skinned African-Americans have had to deal with a type of pain irrelevant to lighter-skinned Americans, but both have had to deal with pain nonetheless. And this separation, this tension, is something that we're just going to have to deal with as part of the healing process. We have to acknowledge it. We have to engage in conversations and discourse, and then we can move on. But to pretend it doesn't exist, I think that's the worst thing we can do.
I think so, too. It's a bad feeling, and people don't realize as, you know, I feel, say, I'm black.
Yes.
But to say that for my sisters and brothers and family members to say I'm not and make up names, I mean it is hurtful somewhat to even be this. You know, this is something that you just like, this is what you was born with. This is genetic, and you can't help it. But it's a painful thing from your own people, your own race, to even get looked at or don't even get accepted or get bullied. I got bullied. I got picked on. I mean, it's a very painful thing to be, you know, I thought it was bad to even be this color.
Yes.
And to grow up, and I just like, I just have to accept it that this is, you know, looking back at my dad and his generation, I have to look at this is where I come from, this is my genetics, and I'm just like, this is what I got to deal with. But it's sad that you don't see a person, you want to look at the skin color first before you really get to know the person. If you get to know the person, exactly, you know that person got feelings, and that the name calling and shining and not wanting to be around, or, you know, doing a man, because it's a painful thing. And I guess people really don't realize, they think because you like skinny, you got it made, or it's very, you have so much stuff come against you that you really don't realize until you face it.
Yes.
All right. Good points, my sister. I appreciate it. Let me go to Ron at 239-1310. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Amos. This is the problem that I think the gentleman there made. I've traveled all over the world, and I've seen Americans do this. You know, just because you are black-skinned, we call everybody African-American. The young woman you're talking about in the movies, she's not African-American. She is African. We go to Europe, and we're there with English people, English blacks, and everything, and we call them African Americans. You know, we need to, if you're going to call them anything, call them African descent or what. We call it, we don't have a word for anybody from the Caribbeans and everything. We call them all African Americans. They're not. We are African Americans here in America. Make a distinguish between Africans from Europe, or whatever else. Everybody's not an African American. Black people in America.
All right, let me let Dr. Hall respond. See, to me, when I see somebody from Britain, or the gentleman that played Dr. Martin Luther King in Selma, you know, he's African British.
That's right, but that's not what we call him.
That's what I call him. I don't know what anybody else calls him. Let me let the guest respond.
Well, I think everyone has a right to their opinion, and the distinctions that the gentleman made reference to, I think they're legitimate, they're valid.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be careful in engaging any kind of dialogue that's going to encourage separation. Now, the fact of the matter is, African descendant people all over the world are going to be viewed similarly by people in a Eurocentric power structure. So whether you're Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Cuban, Afro-American, Afro-British, at the end of the day, you're African, you're black descended. And
I understand that. They appreciate being identified as that. But all of my, I have tons of friends from all over the world, because I've traveled all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They do not appreciate American blacks calling them African American.
You're 100% right, because we are a denigrated race, a denigrated group of people.
No, they don't mind. They do not mind being identified as African. They want you to understand the difference in the origin and the communities that they come out of. They don't want to be called American.
I respect that.
Or American black.
And they should, if they're not
American. We should respect people enough to try to understand their culture, their accent, because, see, this is another thing that gets me here. Mm-hmm. It is a direct indication of how well Jim Crow and racism worked here in America. You can have a telephone conversation with somebody and you identify them as black or African American. You go to Britain, black people will be on the phone and you never know they were black.
Sure.
Or you go some other place. See, what you hear is the lack of education. What you hear is how successful racism and Jim Crow was and still is, because you can identify the lack of whatever, because we as black people don't have that sound everywhere you go. But here in America, if you came from a certain part of town or a certain poverty, you are identified immediately by your vocabulary, the manner in which you speak. They say it's just like a fingerprint or anything else. Police are used to say that was a black person.
Good. You made excellent points. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a quick break. Come back with Dr. Ron Hall. Lines is lit up. All I can tell is the lines are green. So that's the only color my lines are, is either green, and when I punch the button, it's red. So it's a green and red thing.
Okay.
He'll probably comment on the fact of green and red. We also got a question at praiseindy.com. We'll ask about his opinion of early books like Passing and Tar Baby, along with the new modus of the white face craze done by some like Snoop Dogg. We'll ask our guest after the break. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello. This is Councilman Joseph Simpson for District 9, and you're listening to The Afternoon Show with Amos Brown on AM 1310, The Light.
We're talking with Dr. Ron Hall, professor at the School of Social Work at Michigan State University. He spent the last two decades traveling the world, dealing with this whole issue and talking to folks around, literally around the world about skin color. He's the author of two great books. And at praiseindy.com, Doc, I got an email that says, ask the author his opinion of early books like Passing and Tar Baby, along with the new modus of the white face craze done by some like Snoop Dogg. Doc?
If you're asking for my comment, the book Passing I'm familiar with. We still have a little bit of that going on today with the what I would call the new biracial or mixed race movement. During the Civil War era, there was a movement, particularly in Louisiana, where mixed-race African-Americans did not want to be identified as black, and they could not be identified as white, and they advocated for a three-tiered racial system that would have whites at the very top, blacks at the very bottom, and this mixed-race, lighter-skinned community in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I mentioned about pop culture a little earlier and as pertains to Snoop Dogg's film. Anything that enters into the realm of pop culture, I think, is most insidious and most dangerous because it operates on us psychologically when we aren't even aware of what's going on. I see this movement among young people today to refer to one another as hashtag team light skin and hashtag team dark skin. That doesn't sound very threatening on the surface, but what you're doing is internalize a norm and a differentiation within the black community. And then we get back to the old divide and conquer, which has always worked, unfortunately.
Let me go back to the phones in Roslyn. Hi there. No, let me go to hi, Roslyn. Go ahead.
I was raised by my maternal grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was younger, my father's biracial. And when I was younger, I used to always wondered why I wasn't the color of my grandfather. He was like my most favorite person in the world. And he told me, And this is really referring to the young lady that was on just a little while ago. He told me, he says, Sandy, when people say you're different or you're white or you're whatever names they called you back then, he said, tell them that you're an ebony tree. And I said, what's an ebony tree? He said, it's a tree that grows in Africa, and it has white bark, but when you cut it, the inside of it is dark. He says, you're black, but you're an ebony tree. And, you know, that made me feel so much better. I mean, for years. I was, like, in the second grade when he told me that. And I just want to say that people are going to say, call you names, whatever color you are. You can be dark, light, pink, cup, whatever. There's still going to be something said. So I just wanted to put out there that my grandfather told me that, and it did make me feel much better. I don't care what people say. I always refer to that. What he told me, and I always feel better. So, you all have a wonderful day. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Brother Motep at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing today, Amos?
Fine.
And, author, professor, how you doing?
Oh, just fine, just fine.
Doing good. Very insightful commentary here. I just want to ask you two questions, but I want to make one comment. I did read some last week commenting on what the gentleman was speaking about around travels around the world. I've been a lot of places too, and it is a conundrum. I was in the Bahamas and had some people from the Bahamas tell me that they were more civilized than Jamaicans. Now, I was offended because I've been Jamaican a number of times, and people treated me pretty good.
Yes.
So I think we have a problem amongst the diaspora, if I must say, around our perceptions, period, intra towards one another of African descent. I was in Puerto Rico and went to see some of the old depictions of the Africans and some of the Taino Indians,
yes.
And they seem to take a little more pride in their African heritage than a few other places I've been to. But one question I want to ask you, are you familiar with some of Carl Van Vechten's pictures of the Harlem Renaissance back in the day and his book, for lack of a better word, Nigger Haven, which is the name of the book. And Number two, we had this problem even going back to the Cotton Club era when no dark-skinned women would appear in the Cotton Club. And so we still have this problem right now, perception. Why come we and those that do have control, let's say like a Byron Allen who's suing Comcast right now because they won't put his shows on, why come they can't help to solve this issue and maybe we can turn this page? And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Well, with respect to Byron Allen, I would simply say that this is one of the where I think discussion about this issue is really beneficial. Byron Allen may, in fact, not know that this issue is a problem. And when darker-skinned African-Americans cannot hear the words of lighter-skinned and vice versa, then we operate in two different frames of reference. Personally, I see black as a state of mind, and the young lady who spoke a little earlier using the metaphor of an ebony tree is the most dramatic that I've ever heard. Because today, African-Americans may be darker complected than they'll be 30 or 40 years from now. That's a matter of geography, people you come in contact with. But black is a state of mind and a culture. It has nothing to do necessarily with your color. It's not limited to your color.
Let me go to Don at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
Fine.
And to your guests, you know, last night I watched a PBS special called American Denial. There's a guy that's by the name of Mido. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. But one thing that I came away with, you know, it's like, you know, the American flag, we know what it stands for. But there's one thing missing from that American flag, and that's racism. Racism is woven into that flag. Would you agree or would you disagree? And as long as that flag waves, racism will always be here. And I'll take my answer off the line.
All right, Professor?
Well, unfortunately, racism is a part of this, I would say, not just symbols and the flag, but it's a part of the culture. Mm. People don't know it, but there was a book written, I don't know, 20 years ago called The History of White People, and it was written by Nell. And the title is a little bit misleading, but just after the founding of the country, you did not have the separation between races that you have today. People who came from England, people who came from France and Germany, they identified themselves as French, German, and English. And they also associated with blacks and Native Americans because they were working class. Mm-hmm. At some point, the upper class, wealthy white Americans realized that their days were numbered, so they had to find a way to separate these groups. So they idealized French, Germans, etc., not as French and German, but as white, and they gave them a few more privileges that blacks and Indians didn't have. And so they were able to wrest control of the country by having working-class white Americans identify not with African-Americans and Native Americans, but identify with the wealthy-class whites. And you see that happening politically up to today.
239-1310. 239-1310. Let me go back to the phones. And Raymond, hi there.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question is, my mother was extremely fair-complected, and I fell right in the middle, if you were to consider it, I don't know, bronze-colored or golden-colored. So I was able to just exist, if you will, I mean, from lunch table to lunch table, and I really didn't have those extreme effects. But one thing I'm noticing in the modern times is like with the names, the three and four syllables, and the identifiers that even when you get a phone call from someone and they say their name, it's automatically like you can identify. And I'm wondering if there's like a society of wanderings, if you will, in our community or within our race where you have those that are working, those that are successful, those that have masters, and those that really, I guess, stop their education at grade school or high school that are pretty much wandering. They're stuck in the middle, almost, if you will, in the other countries where they're either poor or rich. And have you ever looked at that to see how we can redefine who we are and the wanderings that are going on where you have the naming and the people that almost say or give kids names, if you will, that they really don't even know how to identify why they gave that name or why they identify themselves with certain things. So when they're growing up, it's almost like they become wanderers, and not in a bad way, but there's nowhere they fit into the community, if that makes sense.
Well, there have been several studies that have been done. I've done a few myself where there's a direct correlation between your skin color and basically your quality of life. I'm talking about association with income, education, occupation. So statistically, if you're lighter skinned, you're going to make more money, you're going to have a better job, and you're more likely to be employed. That's a fact. The reason why that happens, that's what we need to get at. And I think sometimes people feel that they don't have a sense of direction because we too often try to define ourselves by our phenotype instead of our life experience, instead of our culture or our ethnic experience. So if you look a certain way, then you can't do this. If you look a certain way, then you're going to be good at something else. And that's just unfortunate.
Dr. Ron Hall, as you've been doing this research and traveling around, how is the younger generation dealing with this? Are they dealing with it differently than those of us that are children of the civil rights era or baby boomers or those of the Depression era? And particularly those that still have a fresh memory of de jure segregation in this country.
Well, unfortunately, our generation, who those of us who came through the 60s, it was all black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you were lighter skinned black, or whether you're medium or darker skinned black, you were black. And so we fought for civil rights on the basis of being more unified. The younger generation is living through the benefits of what we struggled for during the 60s and early 70s. And so their issues are a little different. As a matter of fact, I think they're more directly confronted by the divisions of skin color than we were.
Mm.
You have an increase and an explosion in interracial marriages, so you're producing more mixed race or what's called biracial children. And so they are more directly confronted by the issue of light skin versus dark skin. And you see that exacerbated, as you mentioned a little earlier, in social media, particularly by rap videos, where there's always been an issue. The lighter skinned black women are always selected at the expense of the darker skinned black women. And some artists have made reference to a preference for lighter skinned African American women in their videos. And younger people hear that. That's their life experience. I think what they deal with today is what we dealt with in racial terms 25 or 30 years ago.
Back to the phones. And Rachel, hi there.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. I apologize if I take this a little off subject. I came in when you were talking about the lady from 12 Years a Slave. So if this is on subject, I apologize. I try to make this real brief. But when you were talking about pop culture and how important that is and the subliminal messages, the latest example I'm going to use is that movie Annie, when Jamie Foxx ended up with his assistant who was white. And several years ago, Nia Long, Gabrielle Union, and Sanaa Lathan kind of brought this to light about how many, you know, black leading men are in these movies and they never take a sister along. And of course, you know, they want universal appeal. And if it's black on black, it's a black movie. But could you just kind of speak to that, how that is? I mean, it's in so much. And I really noticed it in Annie. I said, oh man, he's going to end up hooking up with his assistant. There we go again. So could you maybe talk about that subliminal message for just a moment?
That's a great question, Doc.
Yes, I understand, and this has been going on, and people have been complaining about that to no end. I don't know all the personal dynamics that went on regarding the particular movie. Sometimes it's a matter of dollars. Sometimes it's a matter of what the public might find more appealing. Sometimes they're looking for crossover audiences so they can make more money. But I do agree that I think those young African-American men who are in a position can probably advocate a little more enthusiastically about their love interest when they have the opportunity. And Jamie Foxx is—I think he's legitimate. He's pretty big, so it's a possibility he could have chosen his love interest had he felt strongly about that.
Would that be the reverse when you look at what Shonda Rhimes has accomplished? Obviously, with How I Get Away with Murder, with Viola Davis, that's a whole totally different look. And then last week, Cecily Tyson coming on, that was definitely, you know, a different look at it. But then on the other side of the coin on Scandal with Kerry Washington, she can't find no brother to have as a boyfriend for a minute.
Yes. Well, when you find someone like Cecily Tyson and the lady who had the show How to Get Away with
Viola Davis,
they are exceptions. When you are darker complected in the media, unfortunately, you have obstacles and challenges that you have to overcome. not impossible, but you have to be exceptional to overcome those challenges. And when they're put in a position, I assume that they will make a statement in what they do and the choices that they make so that those who come after will have a more level playing field.
It doesn't hurt when you got to hit shell. Let me go to Gene right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. I'll be very brief. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that men that are darker in color always seem to marry a lady that is much lighter or maybe white. And my question is, would you think that the man has more of a complex with his darker skin than the women? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Great question.
Well, that's a little misleading. Okay. When darker complected men marry lighter complected women, that's more of a status symbol. You solidify your having arrived if you have a woman, a mate who is considered the societal ideal, which lighter complected, lighter complected black women are. Where it's a little misleading, during the Civil War era, they had something called run-round men. Run-round men was a term used to refer to light-skinned black men. And they referred to run-round men because they typically had the choice of any black woman in a black community that they wanted. So when we look at this issue, it's not something that is peculiar to men or women. It's an internalized value that exists among black people, but it's probably most visible pertaining to black men and lighter-skinned women.
Let me go to Ron right quick, then we'll take a quick break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, anyway?
Fine.
I'm the difference, Ron.
Yep.
I don't mind calling myself African American. But I'm a two quick points, and I'm gonna get off the phone on this thing and answer. Cicely Tyson, with the exception of anybody that Miles Davis was scared of or was scared of, can pretty much control her on destiny in Hollywood. Because he said Cicely Tyson could tell him where he was going before he went there. But I think I read the book, and I'm thinking that I may have, you know, if I got the right concept out of this book was written basically to explain the cultural conditioning as to why we as blacks overall have just as much problems sometimes with skin color as some whites do. Okay, and it boiled all the way down to even the AME and the CME church splitting, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right, Professor?
Yes. The history of the AME and the CME church, well, there's African Methodist Episcopal and the Colored Methodist Episcopal. Well, the Colored Methodist Episcopal didn't want to be identified. They wanted to distance themselves from Africa. They didn't want to be identified as dark. And that goes back, 80, 90 years?
Right. But here's my question or whatever. Yeah, here's my question. What are we going to do about this? Because I've always said my parents' generation looked at race different than I did. Now, even if you look at a kid like, and I can say kid because I'm in my 60s, and Charles Barkley is maybe just around his 50s. If you look at a kid like Charles Barkley or a Clarence Thomas, when you talk about status symbol, okay,
yes.
Being from the South, where white women particularly were the forbidden group, and all of a sudden being in a position where they could marry, interracial marriage was not frowned upon, and feeling like they have gotten to the top of the mountain, so now they can cast these dispersions on blacks, no matter what color, as long as they're not in the position they are. It's like they've got the American dream. I'll hang up and let you guys discuss that.
All right, Doctor. Doc?
Well, Charles Barkley, I think, is a Southerner from Alabama, and Clarence Thomas is a Southerner from Georgia. And I think that it would not be unusual to assume that they had some issues pertaining to skin color. And in childhood, Clarence Thomas was oftentimes teased. His nickname was an acronym, and they called him ABC, which meant America's Blackest Child. So I think he grew up carrying this baggage with him, and with Charles Barkley as well. This childhood experience was probably not irrelevant to their choices of mates today, but in the long run, you have the same internalized norms and values for idealized light skin in women that I think the country has. And they're no different.
The books are called The Color Complex, The Politics of Skin Color in a New Millennium, and Racism in the 21st Century, An Empirical Analysis of Skin Color. They're available on Amazon, all them other places where you can get books. Dr. Ron Hall, you got your own website?
I have my website. It's called The Color Clinic. And you can also tweet me at the Skin Color Doctor. That's one word, and doctor is spelled D-R.
So now, here's the other thing. Are your Spartans going to make it to the Final Four up in here in the first weekend of April?
Well, we're a little short on talent this year, but I think with the defensive intensity, they will at least make the NCAAs.
So they're going to make the dance.
They will make the dance.
Well, you know, if you get in the dance, what do you need? 5 wins and you're here.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Ron Hall, professor at the School of Social Work, and is an internationally recognized commentator on skin color. We appreciate having you here. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.